The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Plays it into Trey. 2 seconds wide. Trey Slaughter.
Hello and welcome back to Hoop Ball Hawks, the show here on the Hoop Ball Network that is taking flight, where we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm your host, Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia, and I am recording this on Friday, May 21st, ahead of Game 1 of the NBA playoffs for the Atlanta Hawks in the first round. Got that Ric Flair energy right now here in the booth. Hawks have time to game plan, practice, rest, answer a lot of questions, throw some smoke out there about this series. And frankly, this is the series they wanted. This is the series us fans wanted here in Atlanta. And it's almost time, you know, put up or shut up. And I think they're ready. Everyone's counting, you know, the Hawks out, even our colleagues at Hoop Ball Gaming, which I was a guest on the show last night. Y'all check that episode out. I was on there talking about the Knicks-Hawks series as well as the first-round matchups that are out there on the Eastern in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. So, like I said, check that episode out where I stayed true to Atlanta, just like you Hawks fans do, and I defended them like Kendrick Perkins versus Stephen A. Smith. But now that I am back on home court here at Hoop Ball Hawks today, and we have a dear old friend of mine who I've missed. He's coming on the show today. We're going to talk about Hawks, Knicks after this plug for my bookie.
If you like losing money, turn this off right now. But if you love free bands, just like Super Future, then keep listening. Sports betting is getting huge across the nation, and all of my homies love to bet on games. There are a bunch of sites out there for sports betting, but all of my homies love my bookie. Why? Because it's so easy to use. And since y'all my homies too, I'ma plug you. All my homies listening right now can sign up for MyBookie with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus. 100%, just like an A+ in school. Hopefully you got them, but if not, this your chance to get 100%. You like playing blackjack? There are some very fun and free blackjack tournaments, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much that you can do on MyBookie, and the best thing is that no cash is required to enter, and you can win up to $100 in daily challenges and up to $1,000 in weekly tournaments. So you want a chance at free cash money? Then again, my homies, sign up with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus and try to score some, in the words of Future, like I said earlier, free band.
All right, and we are back. And I'm back to welcome my friend, Alan Sroki. It's been too long. We both had a lot going on in life, but we've made, just like the Hawks have had a lot going on their team and on the roster. But here we are at the playoffs. Here we are. We made it. Me and you, we made it. And I'm just so glad that I shot that tweet out. We were able to set this up today. How have you been, my friend?
Love being back with you, man. It has been too long. In fact, it's been, it was like, I'm pretty sure the last time you and I talked, the sky was falling in Hawksland. To put it mildly, I think that was the bottoming out point. And I'm not saying it's because I maybe... We'll test, I guess, you know, after this podcast appearance here. But I'm pretty sure the Hawks, like, you know, went like 25 and 14, or maybe it's even worse. Maybe it's even larger than that. Maybe it's like 29 and 14 since I was on the pod last. So it's either, you know, maybe some either I'm a bad luck charm, or maybe there was some other things like Bogey Bogdanovich coming back, maybe Nate McMillan taking over and saving the season. Maybe those things contributed to it, but we'll find out after this episode how this playoffs go from this point forward.
Yeah, Alan, I'm going with the latter because I'm not putting that on you. Don't open yourself up to that. Don't do
I'm doing the old reverse jinx right now where I'm trying to get out in front of it before I even start spinning the narrative, before the narratives get spun against me in Hoopball Hawks land.
So basically you're pulling LeBron James. You're controlling the narrative beforehand. You're doing the built-in. My ankle's not 100% before you go into the playoffs. And if you happen to, you know, not make it out the first round.
I mean, you know, man, like it was tough even getting to like in the recording booth with you on this one. Like when I was like trying to answer your Skype call, I saw three accept the phone buttons and I just hit the middle one. And thankfully I got you on the other end. So I think, you know, it's been real tough. No one's really had it a lot tougher than me, I don't think, in regards to getting on and recording a podcast before. So I'm glad that you made that analogy.
And neither of us have partied with Drake the night before or Michael B. Jordan. We didn't post no pictures on social media, so we're not hungover for this recording. We are ready, geared up and ready to go. And I want to talk about the regular season, how it ended as far as you being a lifelong Hawks supporter. Obviously, since the last time you've been on the program to where they finished off now, what is your thoughts on the regular season as a whole?
I mean, it was a real for a lot of teams, a lot of fans probably felt this way. This season was so crazy to just continue to just follow in the ups and downs of the peaks and valleys. It was a great season for Atlanta Hawks basketball. A lot of unexpected things went into play there. And I mean, like I said, there was a point where, I mean, we were so sky is falling that we were talking about, you know, Lloyd Pierce needs to be gone. Travis Schlenk might be losing his job. John Collins might be traded at the trade deadline. You know, all that tumultuous, just sort of like, you know, this team had all these expectations and they underperformed so significantly to start the year that it just kind of felt like we didn't have a prayer. And it's just been the excitement that has come since with this team it's fairly unique. I mean, just to speak about being a fan at this moment, like not only just for being a Hawks fan, in all of sports, this is one of the most exciting times when you have a young team that you root for making their first foray into the postseason. There's just, you know, wild expectations. I mean, not saying that, like, you know, it's title or bust or anything. It's just you don't know how this is going to go. And you just really want to see how your guys come together in just these untested waters. I mean, Trae Young, obviously, this is going to be a big moment for him coming into this year. We all know what the narratives were about him. They still persist to this moment about his inability to win. About him just kind of being a stat pattern and not being someone who makes his teammates better. I think that he has proven this season that that is very much not the case. He had sacrificed a lot of the production that we've seen in years past. Yes. This year, and not in like a deferential way. I mean, I think he has really prioritized making sure that guys get theirs in the offense, keeping the offense organized, game manager out there. And I'm incredibly excited to just to see what level he can start taking things to. And, you know, I think that just in general, like Hawks playoff runs, they've never generated a ton of excitement in this city, at least, you know, the ones I've been aware of. I'm only, you know, I wasn't alive during the Neek runs. So I'm sure I know that those series against the Boston Celtics, I mean, those are the totally different level. But, you know, early 2000s Hawks basketball, where they had like a 10-year consecutive run making the postseason, you know, the city really never got up for those. As much as I loved those teams, it was never the type of thing where you're just walking around and you're hearing people just like, oh, you're gonna catch that game tonight against the Magic. You think Joe Johnson's got it in him this year to take us all the way? That was never happening. Obviously the 2015 year, though, probably the exception. I mean, that was the most Hawks-centric buzz I've ever seen, not only in the city, but on a national scale, too. But we all know how that ended. And it's just that season, it was just like we flamed out as far as title aspirations were concerned right after LeBron James kind of stood in our way. And then he stood conference finals in a pretty statement kind of way. But this is different because we have the young star in Trae Young, which Hawks basketball hasn't seen to his level since Dominique. And I don't think there's any debate about that. You know, it's just it's he in his presence have this galvanizing effect for the fandom. And obviously this particular series is going to generate a ton of national conversation. And that in itself is also really exciting, just to have this Hawks team be in the national focus in the way that they're about to be. And what I anticipate is really going to be one of the more competitive series of the first round. So a lot of excitement over here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the best series, in my opinion. Maybe not as far as talent, but just quality of basketball and how hard both of these teams are going to play of the first round. And I'm glad you talked about, you know, the history of, you know, loosely of that Atlanta basketball fandom. And I think more fans of basketball are growing in the Atlanta area. And I think that's why now, more so than in the early 2000s, the energy is a little bit different in the city for the playoffs and for the Hawks in particular. So I'm excited to see them, you know, go out to the State Farm Arena, pull up to bars, obviously following whatever guidelines that are set forth, and having a little bit of camaraderie and watching this game together, because I mean, like you said, and I said, I think this is going to be the best, you know, series of the first round. It's going to be a dogfight, and I think that the Hawks are ready for a fight. I expect some of the vets on this team to set the tone early as far as physicality and hustle. In particular, Clint Capella, who's been snubbed out of, you know, DPOY, and I think he's a better defensive player than Miles Turner. I'm just going to say that. That's no debate.
Not on this program.
Yeah, on this program, that's not a debate. Yeah. Clint Capella is a better defender than Miles Turner. Miles Turner blocks shots, yeah, but what else? I mean, he's gotten better, but he's just in a bad situation in Indiana. That's a story for another program, which is not Hawks related. So, and they're not even in the playoffs. So, bye. But anyway, like, I think Clint Capella, the Solomon Hills, Lou Will, even though he's not a physical player, I think they're going to have a level of intensity that is going to kind of set the tone for the rest of the young guys on this team. And I know Trae Young's going to be ready. I mean, I hope he just doesn't put too much pressure on himself, and he doesn't have to, because he has Bogey. You have a healthy DeAndre Hunter. You got John Collins. You got Clint Capella. You know, I got Danilo Gallinari, Lou Will, as I mentioned, Kevin Huerter. Like, you have, you know, talent in depth on his team that they didn't have in his first few years here in the league. So, and this Hawks team is healthy. So the Hawks are coming in with some energy into this playoffs. I mean,
it's kind of crazy. We finally got to this point after everything we've gone through this year that we basically got everyone back aside from Cam.
Yes. Yes. It looked bleak. It did look bleak, but then the change with Nate McMillan and then how they responded under Nate McMillan, I said back then that they were going to be a playoff team once Nate McMillan took the helm, and that's what happened. I mean, fifth seed. Mm-hmm. Could have arguably been a four seed if the Boston Celtics maybe would have played their players against the Knicks that Sunday before the end of the regular season, but I digress. But it's a lot of excitement going in, yeah. Some surprises this year. I can't really name any disappointments outside of, you know, the health of Cam Reddish this year. Mm-hmm. And maybe some injuries, but I mean, everyone's back, so that's kind of irrelevant now. But really, yeah, Wasn't really any disappointments. The surprises were just players that me and you have talked either offline or on the air that we were surprised that we were getting the production out of Clint Capella. Mm-hmm. We were surprised with the step back as far as in numbers, but the step up in leadership and, you know, ball distribution and of a leader on the court as far as, you know, a Trae Young, the confidence of a DeAndre Hunter in his second year, who was, you know, taking confident jump shots and knocking them down over really good defenders and obviously defending on the other end. Kevin Huerter's aggressiveness, Bogey, and finally when he came back, the production we're getting out of Bogey, which is better than his numbers are better than in Sacramento. So he is continually getting better in the NBA. So there's a lot of things. Oyeko Okongwu, a lot of people were surprised why we drafted him and wanted to call him a bust early. And then now he's looking good. He ended the year with a career high in rebounds and points. And he has a lot of confidence going into the playoffs as well as a young player. So.
Yeah, you go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was going to say, with all the surprises, the disrespect that the Hawks are getting, and you kind of alluded to it, how they've been overlooked. What is that going to do as far as, you know, the Hawks' confidence level going into the playoffs, and then your confidence level in the Hawks as they go into the first round against the Knicks.
You know, it's I like how you were touching on just, you know, the how many expectations have been surpassed by all these guys. Like, when you go through each individual player on this team, I can't point to a single person who really underperformed this season.
Sorry. I had to get that out of me.
I mean, look, I say that and people are probably looking at the numbers. They're like, well, I mean, John Collins sticks out as a guy who has really ramped down his production. I mean, yeah, statistically speaking, I think that Collins, though, is still just as good this year, if not better, than he was last season. The efficiency is still elite for him. The advanced metrics on him as a defender are better this year than they ever have been in the past. Pretty sure, at least. I mean, there's so many different ones you can go to for defense. But, I mean, I think that he has really settled into a very important role on this team, even if he is no longer the second option offensively. I mean, Clint Capella, like you said, I mean, he is a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate, even though he was never a serious contender to win it compared to the Rudy Goberts and probably the Ben Simmonses and the ultimate tally. But I mean, he has had the best year of his career here. He has blown every expectation out of the water, as has Bogdanović. Tony Snell's the best spot up 3-point shooter in the league. I mean, this team has every reason in the world to receive praise for what they've done. I mean, people had lofty expectations for them relative to where they used to be coming into the year, and they surpassed that despite the turbulence of the coaching change and the significant injuries throughout the roster. The big thing here, though, is that the Knicks. Look, I don't hate this Knicks team, man. Like, if we were in a vacuum, like, they've done the exact same thing. The Knicks have surpassed more expectations than anyone this year. I mean that earnestly. Like, this is a team that, I mean, how long have we been clowning on the Knicks in their decision making, their free agency, like, swinging on, like, you know, 3-0 pitches, whiffing themselves out? Just like, how have we been clowning these guys for so long? And this team has just become incredibly likable overnight. Just the Tom Thibodeau classic grit and grind type of, you know, this team's better than the sum of their parts, which I know the Knicks players took exception to in terms of the conversations about talent disparity. The Hawks, both of these teams deserve a ton of praise. And, we can take a look at the media conversations right now. I think the majority of people have New York winning the series. I know that you do not hold that opinion. I don't hold that opinion. And yes, we're biased. But this is not some sort of, like, I don't know, foregone conclusion. There's so much we don't know about what these teams are capable of, their styles of play, how they'll translate to the playoffs. I think the Hawks have a lot of bulletin board material, and I like that. I think that, you know, in a 4-5 matchup in particular, you love having you love having those motivational angles. Not that there will be a lack of motivation on either side because of just, you know, everybody's kind of new here. In terms of playoff runs, the Knicks don't even really have any, like, real, like, any vets who have made real deep runs into the playoffs before. I mean, you know that Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson on those old Bulls teams got a taste, but unfortunately that was cut very short prematurely because of those injuries. So I don't know. I feel like the Hawks have a lot of reasons to feel like they're being doubted. And I like that chip on the shoulder mentality that they hopefully will carry with them into the postseason. I hope that is a positive on the floor, but I mean, it remains to be seen. I get why the focus is on New York, but I really don't think you can point to anyone on this Hawks team and say, well, you should have done more this year to earn some of that praise. It's just can't be done.
Yeah, everyone pretty much overplayed as far as expectations for the year. Kevin Huerter, who I've been hard on to start the year, he has even played a lot better, being more assertive, more aggressive in spots throughout the year to really keep this team afloat with the injuries.
He's been our guiding light. He's the lighthouse. He's the only guy who's been there. He and Solo has just been, like, right, keeping the ship right at all times.
Being Ironman, they're basically Ironman. And so I'm just happy as far as, you know, them being in the playoffs. And I projected a max 38 wins, and they won 41 games this year. They won 3 games more than my prediction. That's amazing. That is amazing by any standard. So they've blown expectations out the water. And like you said, the Knicks have as well. And I've given my, credit to the Knicks on this program, but there's some developing bad blood between these two franchises on the court and on Twitter right now between the two fan bases. Nathan Millen's comments, and you alluded to just, you know, how great it is for the Knicks to have some success, but it's and it's really good for the NBA. We talked about that offline. But Nate Millen getting for $525K for speaking the truth as far as, you know, the Knicks being good and being in the playoffs benefits the NBA. I mean,
like, is that being, was that like interpreted as like as McMillan saying that the fix was in? Because I didn't get that from his comments. That's the only thing. I mean, like you said, we talked about this already, like before we recorded. It's like the only thing I can imagine.
Yeah,
that would be finable. And again, that the fine in and of itself made it a story. No one heard what Nate had to say about that outside.
No
of
one's
like,
paying attention to Nate McMillan. No one's paying attention to the Hawks. I mean, we've only had four. We've had four national television games this year. Nobody has paid attention to us. Stephen A. Smith thinks we're an afterthought, and he's already putting the Knicks in the second round. We had to have Kendrick Perkins defend us.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
What a world. I mean, I do want to say this too. Something that's really cool, and you know, like, this is kind of stupid, but like I think we can all admit as fans, you like it when people take note of your team, right? Like you feel like a level of satisfaction when people acknowledge the things that you see all year long about these guys growing together, beating winning teams, just overachieving. You like it when other people take note. And the Hawks, because of the fact, the very true fact that the NBA is going to put this playoff series is in front of as many eyeballs as possible because of that New York media market. The Hawks are playing prime time every single game. They have the 1 o'clock ABC game. The Hawks haven't played on ABC until they were at the league was absolutely forced to put them on there during like game sevens against the Wizards in the playoffs, or maybe even one of those Cavs games back in 2015. Like that doesn't happen. But this four game stretch, perhaps even more, might be the most watched consecutive stretch of Hawks basketball in like decades.
I mean, agree.
which is crazy because again, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I don't know, people probably weren't all that hype about it that year. And after game two, I think we all knew where that was going. People might have tuned out there. This one, though, the numbers game. People are going to be seeing more Hawks basketball than they have in a long time. And if they impress, then they make people start talking about them in front of all these eyeballs. I don't know. Maybe we start seeing a little more Hawks national media recognition going forward.
I hope so, and I think that this is going to be the coming out party for the Hawks. And as the spotlight is on New York right now with the success they've had this year and the turnaround they've had up in New York, the bright lights up in the Big Apple, Madison Square Garden, you know, the whole allure of the Knicks franchise. But I think this is an opportunity with the Hawks feeling slighted, underappreciated, disrespected. I mean, Trae Young wasn't even an all-star in his own city.
Tell him.
Clint Capella wasn't up for Defensive Player of the Year. I think if DeAndre Hunter was healthy, he would have been Most Improved Player Award in conversation as well. But with injuries and just people just not paying attention to Atlanta, because, I mean, not being in the market when the Hawks had that really good team with four All-Stars, I mean, no one nationwide really believed that the Hawks were going to do anything against LeBron James.
Well, I mean, like,
but it's because it was LeBron James. Like, it was the Cleveland Cavs. It was that time period. It was the Heat, the Cavaliers, like, through that stretch. So, like, LeBron James was terrorizing the Eastern Conference. This is different. The Eastern Conference is wide open for the next few years, in my opinion, even with what they got up in Brooklyn. I think that's only a 3-4 year window. Maybe I say a 3 year window max, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be an opportunity to set up things for years to come for the Atlanta Hawks franchise. This playoff series is going to be very important. And as you alluded to, all the eyes are going to be watching the Knicks. There's going to be eyes in the nation going to be like, holy crap, this Atlanta Hawks team is good. Holy crap, Trae Young is good. The Hawks are fun. Bogey is good.
Is that Klay Thompson out there? Oh, no, that's just Bogey Bogdanovich.
Like, people are going to take notice. And I said on the last program, the Knicks have some people that can have games as well. Like, we're not discounting, you know, the Knicks' depth. I think the Hawks' depth is better than the Knicks. And I think the Hawks have more talent than the Knicks. And then the Knicks, you know, throwing some shots out recently saying, like, we don't think they have more talent than us for talking about the Knicks. And they basically kind of said that they think that they're a tougher team than the Hawks. So I think that's going to be – put it on a bulletin board. More bulletin board comments. You have Julius Randle talking about, yeah, we beat them every game this year, but, you know, you can't count them out. So it's a backhanded compliment. Bulletin board material. Trae Young getting hurt. Knicks fans happy that he got hurt in that third game, which we had the lead, and I think we would have beat the Knicks that game up in Madison Square Garden, but the Knicks ended up winning in overtime, even with Bogey helping us come back, hitting big shots down the stretch. Bulletin board material. Like you said, there's a lot of things that he can put on the wall in that visitor locker room in Madison Square Garden and say, this is what they're saying. Let's go show them what we're talking about down here in Atlanta. That's all you got to say to your team. That's all you got to say. And I think that that chip on the shoulder, the Knicks are going to have, they have toughness. They're tough. They got some dogs on there. They got Tibbs. Tibbs is a dog. He looks like a bulldog and not a French bulldog. Like, they are tough. They are going to bark and bite. That's why we got to be physical. And I think there is going to be an altercation. I think there's going to be some technicals in this series. I think this is going to become physical. And if it comes too physical, that benefits the Knicks. But I think that even if the Knicks are extremely physical, the depth that the Hawks have had and having so many – the Knicks have had very few injuries this year. They've had a consistent roster the entire year. That's why they've been consistently fourth through sixth the entire season. The Hawks have had to fight, claw, battle through adversity, battle through injuries, and players have had to step up at different times throughout the year, whereas they had the continuity more so locked down in New York and the connectivity on the defensive end because they've played more games together with the same units. The Hawks have had different players have their moments in the sun this year, and I think that that's what makes this Hawks team different. You can't guard everybody if you're the Knicks. You can't stop everybody. You can't. You may have one player have a bad game, but you can have John Collins go off for 36. You can have Clint Capella have a 20-20 game. Bogey put up 30. Kevin Huerter somehow putting up 22. Lou Will giving you 18 in a big game. Danilo Gallinari giving you 28 and hitting a lot of threes. We have so many players that have stepped up in moments this year that's what makes this Hawks team dangerous, in my opinion. And if you're listening to us on the National Syndicate right now, you will refer from Hoopball Gaming or wherever you've, you know, happened to stumble on this podcast. First off, welcome. I usually have a lot of energy like this. my friend Alan, you know, we like the Hawks. We're going to support them. But I'm going to say, into this program, into this Hawks team, allow me to reintroduce myself. I'm going to take a Jay-Z line. We're going to reintroduce ourselves to the world in this playoff series, and I cannot wait for Sunday at 1 o'clock. I'm going to be at work, but I'm going to be sneaking away to watch the game. I can't wait, Alan. I can't wait. And I want to segue and obviously give you a moment to talk about what is your big key in this series as far as, you know, how the Hawks do pull this off.
So, I mean, so Julius Randle's correct. The Knicks did beat the Hawks in the three times that they played each other this year.
Yeah.
Those three games, though, two of them came while Lloyd Pierce was still coaching this team. Sorry about that. And look, I guess just as a quick aside here, I mean, look, I think in the last episode, you and I were pretty adamant about how we felt that Lloyd was kind of losing this locker room. And, you know, like, we could see the writing on the wall. I don't think either of us were expecting his ouster, like, pretty much just days after you and I did that podcast. But I will say, I probably defended Lloyd a little too much, considering just the stark difference that having Nate McMillan at the helm brought upon for this team. And yes, there's and part of my defense of Lloyd was because of the injuries and the incomplete roster. I guess it was less of a defense and more just like, I just don't feel confident enough that, like, he is the thing that he is the key component here that is kind of holding this team back. It's evident, though, that he lost more than Trae Young in that locker room. And that's a huge difference. And it's obvious. And yes, the Hawks lost those two games to the Knicks, where, at least coaching wise, it's like a completely different world for them at that point. I mean, the energy levels, getting up for their opponent, totally different mindsets for both teams. I mean, look, I don't think that even the Knicks had Derrick Rose for two of those first three games, too. And he is a huge, important piece for this Knicks team and someone I'm definitely we're going to talk about when we, I guess, get into our keys, respectively. So there's a lot of that I feel like we can throw out from those games. But one thing we definitely can't, it's been made very evident, this Hawks team has no defensive answer for Julius Randle.
Yeah. Not a soul on this team. And not to cut you off, but I know even for me, I know one of my keys is that we're not going to be able to defend Julius Randle one-on-one. It's hard. We're going to have to double team.
You and I are in a similar boat on that one, I think. I think that it's just foolhardy to just think of, like, all right, like, who's going to be the guy to shut him down? You know, is Dre going to get back up into the starting lineup? Is he just going to take him for 35 minutes a night? Like, you know, are we going to maybe put Capella on him a little bit? Which, I mean, I don't think that would work at all. There is no one option. And I think, for me, because this Knicks team is just – I think you kind of let Julius Randle get his own. And I think you need to focus on shutting the other guys down. I think you need to try and focus on closing Randle's passing lanes, because that's, you know, again, like, he's the leading assist guy on the team. The offense runs through him. If you put him in a spot where he isn't able to get to his guys as easily, like, I don't know. I just feel like you're better suited kind of ignoring him. Yeah, not like just leaving him open on the perimeter or anything, but I feel like the game plan's got to be more centric to shutting his teammates down and limiting what options he does have when he's trying to generate these offensive possessions.
You hit the hammer on the nail right there, because I said that last night. I said, like, as much as, you know, we would like to double team him to make it tougher on him, to, you know, affect his vision, to force tougher shots, the thing that makes him dangerous, as you said, is his passing and hitting his open shooters, hitting Emmanuel quickly behind the three-point line, who's killed the Hawks this year. Reggie Bullock, who has hit a lot of timely threes on the Hawks. RJ Barrett, who's had a hell of a second year in the NBA. And you have Derrick Rose. So they have players who can, you know, get their own shot off of a Julius Randle pass. So I think you're absolutely right. They need to stay attached to shooters. They need to make it as tough as they can on Julius Randle, but just, like you said, take away his other options and force him to shoot shots that he doesn't necessarily want to take. He has to take those shots. I think that is a huge key, and I'm glad that you have said this on this program. Great minds think alike.
Yeah. I mean, it's just you don't, you know, there's going to be a lot of matchups that Randle will be able to exploit one-on-one. I mean, look, I think that Collins is an underrated defender. He has been bested by Randle in these three matchups this year. Gallinari is going to be an interesting player to monitor on our side of things for this playoff run, because we know how his defensive limitations, they limit him. And, you know, he's an important scoring cog off the bench, even though he has been a little inconsistent down the stretch here. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he's deployed in these playoff runs. I am curious, too, about really, like, I think, you know, you mentioned our depth being an advantage. I think one thing that the Knicks have going for them is the fact that Thibodeau plays these really, really short rotations. They've been doing this all year. And in the playoffs, that just sort of naturally happens. Teams tend to gear up more with their top five players and pile more minutes on. Rotations thin out naturally just through, like, attrition. You know, like, you got to put all your cards on the table. The reserve guys get less opportunity. I think that gives the Knicks are a little more familiar with that. They're not going to be changing their rotation up. It's kind of crazy to think how they could even thin it out more. From where it is already, like, you know, maybe Emmanuel quickly sees less time out there because Tibbs is distrusting of rookies generally. Of course, you know, there are 17, 18 Elfrid Payton minutes that could easily go to that direction. I hope that we continue to see those, but, you know, I'm curious, and I'll bounce it to you. If the Hawks have to, like, thin their rotation out to, like, I don't know, their top eight guys, who do you feel like would be the first one to see their minutes drop off?
I think in this series, it is going to be Gallinari, as much as I would hate to say it, especially, as you said, being a defensive liability. But I can partially because the Knicks could be in better conditioning because, like you said, they shortened, their rotation and their players are used to being having those minutes. I think in crucial moments, the energy that any of these guys off the bench who've had some days to rest and the veterans like Danilo Gallinari's had some days to rest, the minutes that he could provide in a short stint, the big buckets that he could provide off the second unit because I'm going to call it what it is. The offense in the second unit outside of, a Derrick Rose and, I know he's going to play. Obviously, he's part of that top eight for the Knicks, and they're probably going to want him later on in the game when it matters. But in those spells when you're saving him for the end, this second unit for the Hawks with Lou Will, with Gallo, with Tony Snell, who can hit some threes, Solomon Hill, who can go out there and defend Kevin Herter. That second unit that has pretty much built a little bit of continuity with Bogey is on the floor, especially because Goodwin is not going to be available. I think it's going to provide a lift. And I feel like that was one of the keys that I said in the last episode is that whoever's second unit wins bench points in each of the games is going to help that team probably lend themselves to winning that game. Because if your second unit is producing, because you already know it's going to be a battle between that first unit. They're going to be have their hands full, as you said, guarding Julius Randle. Trae Young's going to get the offense initiated. John Collins is going to have to fit in where he gets in. He's going to have to expel a lot of energy on a defensive end guarding Julius Randle. And I think that the defensively, you've got to just throw a lot of bodies at Julius Randle as well, which is what typically teams do against very physically imposing offensive players. But it's going to be whoever's second unit wins each game is going to really put that team in position to win the game, in my opinion. Even with those short rotations, which, like I said, is an advantage for the Knicks because they know who their guys are. But I think they're used to it. But I think the thing that makes the Hawks dangerous is that you don't know who it could be this night. Like, there are some consistents. There are, Capella's going to be crashing the boards, and he's going to get maybe 12, 11 points, even more. That's some scoring that you can count on. John Collins, he's not really consistent, but he can go off. Bogey's been really consistent. Trae Young's been consistent. And when he's down, he can defer to other players like Bogey to go get some big buckets. And then you have the players off the bench. I think that's the thing that really helps them. Obviously, it can hurt them as well because, sitting on the bench, jump shot cold, you got to get into the rhythm of the game. But I think that is what also makes this Hawks team dangerous.
Yeah, no, I think you encapsulated all that perfectly. And it will be, the second unit battles will definitely be very interesting. Obviously, Derrick Rose is helming that effort for New York, and he's their best point guard by a pretty good margin, I'd say. And he's definitely heating up at the right time, too. I mean, like, over the last month, he was up near, 19 points per game or something like that. And he's looking as crafty as ever. And he will be, if you were to take away a lot of Randall's playmaking opportunities, Rose is then the next guy who would be sort of driving some of that, taking some of that that offensive playmaking off of his back. And, I think that it'll be really interesting to see how Rose, that the Trae Young Derrick Rose matchup will be a pretty interesting one. Trae's defense in general is going to really be exploited, and not that I think he's in a spot where he's going to be taking advantage of all game. But look, we know what it is. The Knicks are going to target Trae a lot, and Trae Young is not a good defender. I'm not about to go try and convince y'all that he is. But he is not as big of a he is capable of engaging and being, a little pesky at times. I think that he doesn't get enough credit for those times where he can be effective on defense. And they'll be really, he's going to have to be asked to do a lot. Him being able to stay in front of guys like D-Rose and being able to adjust when he is switched onto by the opposing team, it's just going to be fascinating to see how he responds and where his intensity level is at on that end of the floor. Night in, night out. So I'm very interested to see the point guard battle in that regard, but mostly just Trae in general and how he responds to all the different ways that the Knicks are going to go at him on both ends of the floor. We see a return to the way that Trae was being defended before Bogey came back and got real hot, where teams were doubling him pretty much every night and just forcing the other guys to, the Julius Randle attack plan for this series, right? People want to get the ball out of his hands and make the other guys do something. It's less of an effective strategy over the last month with Bogey hitting every open three known to man, and others also, you know, taking advantage of their opportunities. But I don't know. I'm curious how they will they plan to guard Trae Young, and whether or not they make it a point of emphasis to take him out of the play early.
I'm glad you said that too, because I'm going to be interested to see that as well. And like you said, with the added talent on this roster now for the Hawks, I don't know if the Knicks can really afford to double team Trae Young like that. I think they're going to be forced to, and I think that's going to allow for Bogey to, who can get his own shot, create for others, and still get to the cup. John Collins he's a 40% three-point shooter. Clint Capella, who's going to be battling with Nerlens Noel, who's a very, very good post player in his own right. He's going to be battling for the board. So it's going to be really hard for the Knicks to do that. I think that they may be forced to at times if Trae does get hot. Let's be real. Trae has had some really, really good games against the New York Knicks this year. And as confident as Julius Randle is about playing the Hawks, because he's had some really great games, career-high games, especially from the three-point line against the Hawks, Trae Young has had some really good games against the Knicks as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they defend him. And this is going to be just a coming out party for Trae Young, just like for the Hawks, for everyone. I mean, I hope he, like you said, doesn't put too much pressure on himself because of the narrative surrounding him. Realize that he has players that have held their own throughout the entire season. And I think that he can take solace in that, just like Julius Randle takes solace in his guys being able to step up in moments as well. So it's going to be a very, very tough matchup for the Hawks. But I think that the Hawks have all the motivation and the bodies and the health. And real quick before I get to your prediction, I'm really interested to see the health level of DeAndre Hunter, who said he's ready to go for the playoffs, and Dunn, who is now off the injury report, and he has been reportedly practicing. Because I feel like defensively, they're going to be big in spurts in this series, being able to put a Chris Dunn on an R.J. Barrett or a D. Rose at some, or Emmanuel Quickley, depending on how, you know, good a shape Dunn is as far as Quickley. But being able to throw Chris Dunn, who can match the physicality that the Knicks does, and do that in from the backcourt. DeAndre Hunter, how he is with his health level to be able to defend. As you said, they're probably going to throw him on Randall at times and others, and maybe guard R.J. Barrett, who can go off in his own right. But his health level, as far as, you know, being confident in himself, that confidence that we saw before he got hurt to knock down some jump shots. Because if he's knocking down some jump shots and adding to the fire for the Hawks, then it's going to be tough for the Knicks to beat the Hawks in that regard, depending on how healthy DeAndre Hunter is. I wish we had Cam Reddish to be able to throw another body out there, especially throw Cam Reddish on his former Duke teammate R.J. Barrett. That would be a very interesting sight to see, as well as Cam Reddish has not had good games against R.J. Barrett thus far. And him being healthy and trying to prove something, that could be something as well. So it's just a lot of interesting pieces. So with that, I'm going to ask, obviously, I already know you're going to pick the Hawks. What is your projection?
I don't know, man. I really like, I got a lot of Reggie Bullock stock, you know. I think I have a top shot moment of him. I might be a little more Knicks amenable than you're giving me credit for, but no, I'm taking the Hawks in this series. Call it bias, call it, you know, whatever. My confidence level in this prediction, and I'm going to go with Hawks in six, because I don't think that they can win a seven. If this goes to seven, I think they lose in the Garden if they make it to that point. But I do think this will be a long series, because I do think that these teams are a little more evenly matched than the regular season record would indicate. I think that there's a lot of factors that you can make an argument for both sides. I don't think anyone could confidently tell you, though, how the series is going to play out because of just the unknowns across the board on both sides. I'm saying Hawks in six. I feel confident that it goes to, you know, beyond four and five games, but I can't. And this is such a cop-out answer. I apologize to you and the listeners, but I mean, if y'all feel more confident than I, you can let me know. I think that the Hawks ultimately win out because of their collection of talent and because of just how hot everyone is right now shooting the ball, which, I mean, again, the Knicks are too. I mean, RJ Barrett's averaging like three threes a game at the plate over these last month or something like that. I mean, he's been turning up at the right time too, but I just feel that the Hawks have the better set. They just have more talent. And it's just a lot easier to defer to overall talent at the end of the day. And, you know, I think it's just going to come down to how these two head coaches game plan for their opposing star players and Trey and Julius Randle, because the series is really going to be defined to how effective those two are, not only at getting their own, but getting others involved as well, like we've touched on.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. You mentioned, you know, how each coach is going to game plan for the other. Nate McMillan came out earlier this week saying, you know, we sucked defending the Knicks this year. So I know I'm really interested in seeing the defensive game plan. They've had ample time to practice, rest, watch film, and really come up with a solid game plan to go out there and defend better, because we know what the Hawks can do offensively. I mean, they're going to have to move the ball. They're going to have to get that defense for the Knicks moving side to side, knock down some jump shots, shoot well from the three-point line to kind of take out some of that physicality. But I'm really excited to see what defensive game plan Nate McMillan is going to have. And I think a game seven will be tough in New York. I 100% agree with that. And both of these teams play well at home. So I said this on the last program, if the Hawks can steal game one or two in New York, I think it goes six. If not, I think it'll be a seven-game series. And I think that in a game seven, when you've seen the team multiple times, you start to get a feel for them. You've used to taking that physicality from Julius Randle. You've kind of seen what Derrick Rose can do. You've seen the limitations in RJ Barrett's game. You know he's gotten better in year two. And you realize that outside of that, I mean, they really don't have any other options scoring. And so as people can coming up and having that game, this is the game that Lou Will showed up and put up 18, or Gallinari. Like, I feel like there's a lot of players in this Hawks team that have that ability. And I think that in a game seven under the bright lights, to help out Trae Young, he has a lot of people on this team. This team trusts each other. They're starting to build some continuity and connectivity on the defensive end, and they have that continuity offensively in the first unit, and especially in that second unit this year. That second unit has really won them some games this year, and I think that in a game seven, he can lean on some other players. They're used to defending, and the Knicks team, I mean, they're a tough team. They had a lot of grit. They're like Memphis. They're physical. They're going to play hard, but I think that the Hawks have been in a lot of games this year where they were down and had to fight with their backs against the wall and come back to win games and win tough games. So I think in a game seven, I think the Hawks do pull it out, and the Hawks win this in seven games, and they move on to the next round.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, this series is just so cool just because you're going to have new blood in that second round one way or the other, which is always nice. That is a matchup against the Philadelphia 76ers team that's also had their share of playoff struggles over the years too. I think it's just the overall sense of optimism that everyone has about their teams going into these playoffs, unless of course you have key guys banged up, and maybe not, but like this year's just been so weird and so derailed from all the obviously COVID and just the higher level of injuries that it feels like we've all been seeing, that can you remember a year where no one felt, where there was no clear favorites in both conferences to make it to the finals? Most people assume that the Nets are the team to beat out East and that they're the favorites, but they've got plenty of questions around just, you know, roster continuity and just experience playing together. I mean, out West, I think you'd say the Lakers are probably considered the most likely, even though they are the seventh seed. But I mean, they're in and of itself, they're the seventh seed. LeBron and AD have been banged up forever. I mean, everyone has reasonable doubt as to who can make it there. And that alone, on top of just the newness this is for this Hawks team being there and everyone's optimism to see, you know, the era of Trae Young really take off in this really impactful moment here in his first playoff debut in the Garden, there's room for optimism about going forward here. This could be one of those rare years where it's anyone's game. Would it be shocking to see the Hawks be hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy once all the dust settles? Yeah, probably. Maybe I'm underselling it.
That would be very shocking.
No, man, I thought it the whole time. I mean, once I saw Kevin Herter establish that aggressiveness this year, it was over.
Wow.
No. But, man, I'm just excited. I'm sorry. You can tell. I'm giddy over here. I'm racing through this here. But this is going to be a memorable playoff series for a ton of different reasons. And you know what? I think the best part about it, too, is that we're playing with house money, because I think that this Hawks team's ahead of schedule. And they're going to bring back this exact squad next year to do it again and to build on this. And that's just a really exciting place to be as a fan. Nothing but optimism over here. I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
And you have all the right to be optimistic. I'm really excited for this. And I know that, like I said, the Hawks are going to move to the second round. I know the NBA will want to see the Knicks in the second round for money purposes. And a Knicks-Philly matchup would be kind of fun. If you want to find me 25K, I will send you an IOU because I ain't got it.
They're going to find Nate McMillan 50 grand if the Hawks make it that far, just because.
Put that out there. He's like, you win against the conspiracy, which is no conspiracy at all. But it's going to be, like I said, a coming out party for the Hawks. Hawks fans, talk your stuff. Bring out the lead receipts. Please be proud of this team. You know, pull up to the arena.
Let's get loud.
You know, gather safely and watch these games, because like me and Alan have said, this is going to be the building of something to come for the next few years, in my opinion. This is the beginning of a five-year window, I think, where the Hawks have a legitimate shot to be considered a top-half team in the East. And depending on how things shake up at the top with how the roster is constructed in Philly, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn, with the Hawks being fifth right now, and I mean, the sky is truly the limit, and they can soar. Cheesy. That was cheesy. I'm sorry.
I believe I can fly. Just starts playing in the background as we fade out here.
I'm sorry, fans. I didn't want to get cheesy like that. I saw an
opportunity. You're right, though. You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong, but I saw an opportunity and I took it. But Alan, I want to thank you again for coming on the program today. My friend, Alan Soroki, it's been too long. He will be back here during the playoffs, so you can bet on that. Especially if this goes seven games, he gonna be here. So Alan, tell them where they can find you and address my people, your people, our people, Hawks fans, HoopBall Hawks supporters and listeners.
Well, my friend Brad, it's great to talk to you again and be back here. And like I said at the top, very happy that you and I are back to our optimistic podcasting and not the doom and gloom that we had going there for that month stretch when I was last here. So very excited to see what's to come this Sunday and beyond. Y'all can follow me on Twitter at Alan Soroki, AlanSrochi. I'm not really up to much right now. I'm just watching the playoffs like the rest of y'all. I'm not doing all that much with the site now that we're sort of ramping into off-season mode, but that will change definitely once we start getting – once, like, you know, we're probably past the playoffs and we start gearing up for the next regular season fantasy basketball stuff, I'll be putting some interesting stuff out there, to say the least. Not sure quite what yet, but I do know that I will be involved. So I am just – I'm just happy to be here and I'm happy to be back soon. And let's go Hawks.
Let's go Hawks. And, if you love what you heard today, give us 5 stars. Give Alan a follow. Give us a good review, share it, tell everybody in Atlanta, across the United States, the globe, about HoopBall Hawks. Share it. We're the hottest new podcast covering the Atlanta Hawks. Playoffs are gearing up. We're going to be here. We're going to be real. I'm going to keep it real as always. I'm going to keep it optimistic, and I'm going to keep it fun as I cover this team throughout this year. So tell everybody, NBA basketball enthusiasts, come. You know, check out your boy here on HoopBall Hawks. Follow us on Twitter at HoopBall Hawks. That is at HoopBall Hawks on Twitter. Follow myself on Twitter at Brad Jarrett 67. That is Brad Jarrett 67. Sheesh! Playoffs are here. Let's go Hawks. We'll see you guys on Sunday after the game.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.